Well, while I can listen to that all morning, let me just say that the word of the hour, or half hour in this case, is dinosaur. We mentioned it as two distinguished area organizations are focusing on the diverse group of animals of the clade Dinosauria. MISCI, Museum of Innovation and Science, has an exhibit, Dinosaurs, which is animatronic dinosaurs on display through September 29th. And then the Dudley Observatory is offering one of their Skywatch lectures, Death of the Dinosaurs, on September 25th. And this morning we welcome William Mack Sutta, the MISCI Executive Director, and John Delano, Dudley Observatory Skywatch Lecture Series Lecturer, Distinguished Teaching Professor, Collins Fellow, Associate Dean, the College of Arts and Sciences, and Associate Director of the New York Center for Astrobiology at the University at Albany. Gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much.
It's good to be here.
Thank you, Joe.
Always a pleasure to have you both here. Always, it's been a while. Let us begin with you, Mac, as far as of how this ultimately of well, let's go to the larger question: why do dinosaurs work in programming at a museum or in any kind of programming? It seems that when in doubt, go with dinosaurs, and people will come.
Well, dinosaurs are a mystery, and people love mysteries. They're great big. They ruled the Earth for many, many years. They're no longer here. All we know about them, we have to reconstruct from fossil remnants or from the behavior of animals that we see around us today. And it's sort of what science does, and people love them. Little kids love them. Every five-year-old probably knows more about dinosaurs than I do, because that's sort of you start off by learning names and categorizing things, and dinosaurs really is interesting to young children. So that's why we do it.
John, what do you think as far as our fascination with dinosaurs, young and old, I guess?
Yes, that's right. Just as Mac mentioned, long-lived, about 200 million years they were around, you know, in all those different species. They were the largest, some of those species were the largest land animals that ever walked the planet. Spectacular. Spectacular in their diversity and strategies for survival.
So how has it been going at MISCI of having these technological creatures roaming about?
Well, we've set all-time attendance records for this summer, and the dinosaurs have been very well received, and we get lots of families with small kids, but we get lots of senior citizens, and we even get young couples who are on dates who come to see the dinosaurs.
Oh, good, good. That's nothing says blooming true love like going
dinosaurs.
To see dinosaurs, sure. Roaring, they roar. They make noise, right?
They move.
They move. They are robotic in nature, and yet somewhat lifelike.
They're animatronic. They're robots that work off of compressed air, and they have a soundtrack, and they move, and they're full sized, and so people get an idea of scale.
And then, of course, the teaching moment can become when you say, okay, yes, this is a animatronic, it is a robot, but this is what the real creature could do and what they ate and so forth.
Right. And also how we know that. For instance, you know, we know that some dinosaurs were herd animals, and we know that from fossilized tracks of the herds. Some of the behavior we just sort of predict because we know what modern animals were like. So we have herds of bison, for instance. So that we put all that together and we come up with a picture. But the picture changes from time to time. For instance, more and more people are beginning to think the closest relative of a dinosaur is a chicken, because some of the dinosaurs had feathers.
Oh. Do you buy that, John?
Yes, and in fact, the color, of some of the feathers has been determined from fossils
to be similar to that of a dinosaur.
The colors of ancient dinosaur feathered dinosaurs. Some of those fossils that have been found in China, have recently are so well preserved. Not that the feather actually exists, but structures in the feathers exist that have provided key information on the color of some of the feathers back 70 million years ago.
And it makes perfect sense. If you know, the idea that all dinosaurs used to be, you know, we used to think they were gray or green, that's
right.
Sort of passé, because if you look at modern animals, they're very colorful, and we suspect that the dinosaurs were pretty colorful as well.
It is it's fascinating to me when we think about I guess this goes into the initial question of why we're so fascinated with this stuff, but it's the resemblance that they have to other creatures that we can sort of imagine it, right? I mean, we can sort of in our mind think of it. It's not a foreign concept.
No. And, you know, were dinosaurs good mothers in some cases? Maybe yes. In other cases, maybe not. We look at contemporary animal behavior and try to sort of match up, you know, for what we see from the fossil record.
On September 25th, John Delano will be giving a lecture which will talk about the death of the dinosaurs and explore how dinosaurs help us to understand the chemical, physical, and geological conditions of early Earth, and which set the stage for life on our planet, but was not so good for the dinosaurs.
It was a bad day for the dinosaurs around 65.5 million years ago. An asteroid impact was one of the factors that apparently contributed to their demise. They'd been around a long time, quite successful, very diverse in their species, and then this bad day occurred with a large asteroid striking in Central America that contributed some real horrible environmental stresses.
And, I mean, to kill out an, so is it immediate of the death of the dinosaurs, or how long a period are we talking about?
Yeah, the length of time of how long it took was certainly not immediate, but is still being worked on. It's still not clear exactly how long it took.
But when you've been around for millions of years, it was a long time by our time scale for them to die out, but it was pretty abrupt for them.
Right.
So... one of the things we're really pleased about is having John speak at MySci. It's part of a new collaboration and partnership we have with the Dudley Observatory, which is now housed at MySci. And I think this is just the first of many things that we'll do together.
That is it's a wonderful partnership, obviously. When you think of this, the death of the dinosaurs, and we talk about... sort of a dying out. What was the average life of a single dinosaur?
Yeah, that varied a lot with species, but some of the larger ones grew fast. They went from adolescence to adulthood, perhaps in just a few, I'm trying to dig on my memory here, 10 years or so,
okay.
And doing that transition, but then could have lasted for 100 years or so. But
wow.
But again, that is still being worked on, as you'd expect.
I assume all of this stuff will always be worked on, right? We'll never know the full story.
I'm not sure never is exactly appropriate here.
We don't ever say never in science.
That's right. Don't say never. But
okay.
certainly the our information will become better. Our understanding will be better. And will we ever understand everything? No. But we're making a lot of progress.
Were there areas when you think about you mentioned about the asteroid hitting in Central America. So when you look at the world, was there a part of this world that we know for a fact that the dinosaurs were not present?
No.
They're pretty wide.
They were pretty ubiquitous.
Throughout the world as we identify it now.
Yes. Yeah, and the distribution of continents was a bit different then than it is
sure.
Now, of course. But yes, that's right.
So those findings in the fossils, the findings of you know, like the feather that you mentioned, things like that still happen, which only further our understanding.
Right? Yes. But one of the problems that you have with fossils is that they're geologic deposits and they get worn away. So, for instance, in New York, you don't find many dinosaur fossils because of the glaciation that eradicated most of them. There's some fossils, but not many.
There's a great set of footprints. Near Hartford, for example, there's a magnificent collection at the in Rocky Hill, just about 15 minutes drive south of Hartford, Connecticut. There are several hundred pristine footprints of dinosaurs. And of course, the New York State Museum has a display of footprints as well.
When you mentioned I'm still on this feather thing, but when you mentioned the feather and the length of it and so forth, any finding can tell us an amazing amount of information And I assume not just about that species, right? About the time period and what else was going on.
Yes. This is a very exciting area of research for geochemists and paleontologists and geologists and ecologists and so forth. So they're all bringing their expertise to bear on a whole bunch of different things. So yes, what were oxygen levels in the atmosphere back then? Much higher than they are now. Was it warmer then? Yes. Was sea level much higher then? Yeah. A number of things have been able to be convincingly reconstructed for some of the conditions that existed then.
When the dinosaurs go home from your museum, what is next?
Well, we will have a big holiday exhibit on toys and trains that opens right after Thanksgiving, day after Thanksgiving. That'll be our next biggie.
That is another crowd favorite, I would think.
Yeah, and this year will be bigger and better and open more days.
Excellent. And as far as the Dove Dooley Observatory, give us a sense of your operation and how you're working now, and especially with the partnership with MISAI.
Well, I'm not sure John knows about that because he's just a volunteer
lecturer,
to do this.
Yes.
But their offices are in MISAI. If you call the MISAI number, you get a chance to connect with the Dudley Observatory. They circulate a portable planetarium to schools, and you can do that through the reservations line at MISAI or through the BOCES. We'll continue to have other events, star parties together, joint things. I want to say about John's lecture on the 25th. It's at 6:30 p.m. at MISAI, and the dinosaurs will be on, and the exhibits will be on, and will be a small reception. It's free. We have a suggested donation of $5 to $10, but it is free for people who want to come.
And this is part of an ongoing lecture series that you that you have.
Yes.
Yeah. And they'll be
throughout the year and throughout the region.
Wonderful. How does this connect into astrobiology? Does it?
Yeah, I think it does, Joe, in a number of ways. For example, let's raise the question, is intelligence inevitable during planetary evolution?
I don't know.
And I'm not sure either, but 65 million years ago, there was this reset, this evolutionary reset that occurred that suggested that those reptiles, good job, been around for about 200 million years. Survival of the luckiest is going to play out now, and let's give the mammals a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, what is the evolutionary pathway for the evolution of life, not only on Earth, but on planets orbiting other stars, of which we currently have a pretty good idea of over 3,000 planets orbiting other planets around nearby stars?
And if you know the principles, the principles are uniform. So if you know how evolution progressed on the Earth, you have a good idea how it progressed anywhere else.
How does the extinction of the dinosaurs clue us in into the extinction of species on our planet now? I mean, is that a roadmap in some ways? I mean, obviously some of it we know, okay, this is hunting or this is, you know, this. But as far as we continue to evolve and creatures continue to evolve, are we following kind of that same path?
You know, evolution is, of course, a complicated thing. Environmental stresses, of course, contribute to extinctions, but also the emergence of new species. Is it something that we can map with confidence through geological time and predict? No.
Yeah, we still don't know.
Too many variables.
Yeah.
But I always think of it more of as a warning sign than a roadmap.
Yeah. Right, that it can happen.
Yes.
I mean, and probably will. I mean, something will happen.
There are, for example, we already now know of about 300,000 near-Earth asteroids. And the thing that struck around 65 million years ago that was contributed to the demise of the dinosaurs was a near-Earth asteroid.
Okay, so
and there are 300,000 of them currently known going around in our region of space.
So what would it take for one of those to plop down in the
center? None of them are currently, there are some that are labeled as potentially hazardous asteroids, but there are none currently known that will intercept us within 100 years or so.
Okay. So Windex is potentially hazardous. So how do we make a difference between
Windex,
you know, of ingesting something that you shouldn't versus an asteroid hurling into Earth and killing us
the
all?
The difference in Windex and an asteroid is the scale, of course.
Yes.
So
it would be one person versus, you know, a species or our planet as we know it.
Right.
And you know, last February we had that Chelyabinsk.
Really close.
Real close. That was about 20 meters as opposed to 20 meter diameter object that hit in Russia. That was a nice event. Interesting. About 20 times bigger than the first atomic bombs that went off. So it was a pretty good one. But the one that knocked the dinosaurs was about 10 kilometers.
Wow. So 65, so another way of looking at it, in my glass half full attitude toward life, that the way to look at it is we have avoided this oncoming train for 65 million years, and we're probably in pretty good shape for a while.
That is a glass half full.
Well, you know, NASA's has
but
an
But not necessarily accurate? Okay, there you go.
NASA has an effort to try to catalog the dangerous ones, and the problem is that we probably don't know them all already.
That's right. So. Yeah, the 300,000 that are currently estimated as near-Earth asteroids, as Max says, only 3%.
Right.
Only 3% have been mapped. 300,000 is what currently the mathematics indicates are out there, but only 3% are actually mapped.
Okay, so you're painting a rather grim picture.
My
question is, so do I, when I'm getting fuel oil, should I get a full tank for the winter? Or should I plan on using it all?
Yeah, can you buy green bananas? You
know, okay. That's
right.
All right.
Well. That's right. No, this is something which happened. This is a process, and it's an ongoing process, and it will continue to occur, as Max says. But it's not something that we can set our clocks on.
Mac and John, I thank you both so much for joining us this morning. Of course, my side, the Museum of Innovation and Science, has their wonderful exhibit, Dinosaurs, which is on display through September 29th. You can find out more information by going to schenectadymuseum.org. Also, the Dudley Observatory Skywatch lecture series, Death of the Dinosaurs, takes place on September 25th, and you can go to dudleyobservatory.org and find out more information about John Delano's presentation on the 25th. Gentlemen, it's always a great pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.